Welcome to Sports Business Secrets. I'm your host, Kevin Tarka. This podcast is specifically designed to share secrets from experts in the sports business world to help you along your own path to success in this industry. Each episode is packed with lessons and insights that never expire. You'll hear from general managers of professional teams to CEOs of sports tech companies to agents, coaches, players, and everything in between. I invite you to join me in real time on my personal journey of representing players and coaches, traveling the world, and always finding a way to battle through obstacles in this competitive industry. Clay, welcome to Sports Business Secrets.
Kev, happy to be here, man.
An episode that is long overdue. Per usual, when I have my guests on, I always start with how reminiscing on how we met, and it was a little bit more than 5 years ago. The one and only Mike Reynoso, we have to give him a shout out. He's going to be upset that we coordinated your episode before his, but we'll have to get him on here in 2024. But we got introduced through Mike and started chatting about the agency business, stayed in touch, had our hangouts in Munster in Germany and a few other places abroad, and been fun to be in the business with people like yourself. So we have a plethora of topics to talk about today. Before we jump into it here, I will give the audience who is less familiar with you just a brief intro here. So bear with me. So those who don't know Clay yet, he's a San Francisco, California native who's been involved with the basketball industry in different capacities for nearly a decade, actually over a decade at this point, from volunteer video coordinator positions to high school coaching to player representation to college coaching to scouting and pretty much literally everything in between. He earned his master's in sports management at the University of San Francisco, and he's currently the West Coast Scout and Director of Business Development for One Mode Sports, in addition to almost more than a year into his newest endeavor as CEO of New Era Athlete. So officially welcome to the pod.
Quite the intro. I appreciate it, man.
I'll shut up now and let you introduce yourself further.
No, I mean, hearing all that stuff, just, you know, I'm like, man, I really have kind of done it all in all capacities. Throwing in some real full-time jobs in there as well. But yeah, it's been quite the journey. I mean, you pretty much hit it. Started off as a team manager at Cal State Northridge in the Big West my last year in college, and figured, you know, mom asked me my last year in college, what do you want to do? And I was like, man, I think I want to do this basketball stuff. Let's give it a go. So did that team manager stuff. Graduated, they brought me back as kind of the head manager, and they kind of let me do some video coordinator stuff. Left, came home, like you said, got my master's in sport management over at the University of San Francisco. Shout out Dons. All the while I was in that program, I was, you know, full-time job, half and made golf links, throwing events, working at the golf course, coaching basketball, high school basketball, doing some other jobs in between, work with the San Francisco Giants as far as a suite manager. So after that, after the JUCO, and then again, coaching JUCO Life 2 with Mike Reynoso, and after the coaching experience, kind of realized that coaching wasn't the route that I wanted to go, but I wanted to stay within the industry, and new dudes playing overseas, and just hopped overseas for 6 weeks, hit about six different countries, and stayed with dudes that I knew playing professionally and learned the business a little bit. And the last pit stop was Switzerland. Got my FIBA license there in 2018, I believe, and came back, had my first recruiting class, learned a lot, summer showcases out in Vegas. Hopping from gym to gym, more than just summer league going on out there. Fast forward to 2022, came on with One Mode Sports full time. And then in the November of 2022, new era kind of came about. And, you know, here we are doing, you know, full time CEO of New Era and West Coast scouting and recruiting for One Mode Sports.
I love it, man. Well, as I mentioned, we can probably talk hours about each of those stops, but for the sake of this episode, we're really going to dive into the NIL stuff. But before we get there, real quick, obviously, shout out to OMS because you're still there as the recruiter, business development director. And so if we're not going to really dive into the agent stuff in this episode for the audience, if you want to hear more about OMS specifically, you can tap into Drew Kelso's episode. But from that perspective, I guess just to obviously show OMS some love, like you noticed, or at least it seems that you noticed, part of what you were doing at OMS was the NIL stuff for basketball guys, right? And you kind of picked up that was going to be the next big thing, and you started helping some of your clients, right? Is that when you really decided, like when did you see the success for your OMS clients on the marketing NIL type side, and when did you decide to make that transition to being like, look, I'm going to do this thing full time, like kind of on my own while simultaneously helping the basketball clients?
Yeah, so we never really dove into OMS like having NIL clients, and we talked about it a little bit, but they're two separate, completely separate entities. I let my license, agent license time out, so I'm, not a licensed agent, at the moment, and nor you have to be, when dealing with NIL. There's little to no requirements when it comes to that, and I feel like that will change here, in the near future. But yeah, I mean, NIL is such a new area, new lane. And there's no, at the end of the day, like organically, if I'm doing my job correctly, at New Era, and that's very, it's very similar on how things are run. They'll check out one mode of sports, but there's no agreement or binding agreement where you have to slide over to one side. It is what it is. And I think it's, and you see the, some bigger agencies that are signing NIL kids, and they're in the same house, which is totally, fine. It is what it is. There's no rule against it. But we just kind of wanted to go a separate way with it. And at the end of the day, I think it was ultimately smart, because I don't think it'll be just basketball players that I represent. I'm kind of dabbling too with multiple athletes, and on the women's side as well. So there's again, it's an ever evolving industry, and wherever New Era goes with it is, it's where it goes. But right now, the main thing is kind of helping not only college players navigate, but high school players in the states that allow it, to understand what NIL is, because a lot of it has to do with recruitment. There's not parents out there that, they have 9-to-5s. Why should or how should they know about any of this stuff that's going on? So I've talk to high school kids, parents, college kids who are entering the portal, which we'll get into, creating off the court, creating new opportunities. There's, a couple examples that we've done with the couple clients that we have at New Era that, that throwing summer camps, just do you really utilizing their name, image, and likeness and going down that road.
Love it. Yeah, we'll dive into some specific examples because I definitely want you to share kind of how you operate. But just to touch on the fact that it's separate, I really like that. I mean, like you said, there's no rhyme or reason to what makes a successful NIL or sports representation agency. You can have one business model, it could be amazing. You can have a different business model, it could be the opposite. But I do like the fact that there's really no strings attached, right? Like the one thing that I always hesitate, or I always tell athletes to hesitate and be aware of, at least, is if you sign something with an NIL agent or with a marketing agreement in college, that you're required to be with that agency, which is fine, but I like the no strings attached. You get to go that genuine relationship, and if it happens that they can be represented by the same company or the same group after, great. If not, no worries, because you really don't have any strings attached. Like you're there to help them with opportunities on the court and off the court. So I love that. Just wanted to touch on that. Cool, man. All right. Well, you obviously talked about what New Era is, but let's jump right into NIL stuff. So let's start from the beginning. NIL, for someone who lives under a rock, let's go over a couple of terms here. NIL, I think people know what it is, so you don't have to really talk about what is NIL, but you can give a little summary if you want. But what is So start with what is NIL, and then let's jump into collectives, because that's one of the first words that you talk that you hear when student athletes hear about NIL. What is a collective?
So I kind of, whenever I kind of break it down, and again, I'm Do I claim to be an expert in the field? No, I don't think anybody is until kind of we really have a baseline stream of what it, you know, is actually, you know, in a couple of years. But I'm just kind of talking about the experience that I've had with the clients that I've helped. So I kind of break it down in a simple term where there's really two sides of NIL. There's the NIL collective side, and then there's, you know, your, I guess, true NIL money, name, image, and likeness. The NIL collectives, they are separate from the universities. They are basically a 501c3 LLC, basically formed from alumni, donors, fans of a program that want to help out as far as, you know, financially. And, you know, the good ones that are creating actual opportunities for kids, you know, in the community. So NIL collective, I guess you could use as the backbone and the bank of these, you know, football programs, these basketball programs that better, you know, better or worse, they're paying salaries and it just is what it is. So, you know, that's where the majority of the money's coming from. When, you know, you hear players talk about, you know, getting big money or the bag, as they say, like that's where it's coming from. And the good ones have, you know, guys under agreements where, hey, you have to do this, this, and this to get this, this, and this, as, you know, as a business. And on the other side, you have the NIL, you know, money, where NIL, name, image, and likeness, it's the true meaning of it. It's where those off the court and off the field, you know, opportunities occur. Fun little, like I've done youth camps with my guys. I've done, you know, merchandise stuff, very, you know, not there's some money to be made, but at the end of the day, it's not, you know, earth shattering or groundbreaking, but, you know, college students, they'll take a couple $100, you know, $1,000 here and there. That goes a long way. I know it would have when I was in college. And you're getting that experience as far as the off the court, you're partnering with a company off social media. You're, you know, do have deadlines. There's agreements on that side too. It's holding you accountable. So there's, like I said, two sides to it, the NIL collectives, and then the, you know, the true meaning, I guess, off the court and off the field branding of name, image, and likeness.
Yeah, I like the way you separated that because I don't think too many people do. So I guess for first question, what percentage of NIL comes through collectives? If there's a way to, you know, I've seen a bunch of numbers, but like generally speaking, what percentage do you think of overall NIL money comes through collectives versus comes through separate brand deals?
I mean, it really depends on who you are as far as the off the court deals go. The off the court deals, I have found that, you know, it is heavy on what you do on the court or field and what you do on the social media side.
Of course.
The ladies kill it a lot more off the court and off the field than the guys do on the social media side. And as far as I'd probably say, you know, unless you're, you know, again, Bronny James, like he was in a commercial with Fast and Furious, like that's, you know, it's depends on who you are really on that side, but I'd probably say it's 80-20. If we're really being honest, but again, those, and that might, you know, it, and that's just from my own experience and from my dealings of the athletes that I help out. But I wouldn't take that to the bank by any means.
Yeah, that's kind of the numbers that I've seen and what I've taken from it. But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the true NIL side, it's really entrepreneurship is the way that I refer to it, right? So it's like that's actually where most NIL agents come into play, correct? Is the true NIL money. Well, I guess it could be with both, which we'll get to in a second, because that brings in the portal, right? But like the true NIL money side is, you know, what's the true market value for somebody being an influencer or tapping into their audience, right?
Yeah. And that's based on what the company wants and what they're willing to pay. It's like any other thing. And as far as like being a student athlete, you have no time to go ahead and search out off the court or off the field deals. Like you do need somebody like myself to help orchestrate that. You know, having a couple student athletes at Stanford, like I know their workload and I know, you know, the Zoom calls that we're on, they're, you know, I'm interrupting a school, like a homework assignment, you know, they don't have any time to do that. So, you know, as far as forming a summer camp, reaching out to businesses, that's something they might want to, you know, explore. Like that's something that I'm there to do. And we sit down and we kind of, you know, sit down and devise a plan on what are your hobbies? What do you like to do? And, you know, we search those out. And, you know, sometimes you hit, sometimes you don't, but, you know, that's just is what it is.
So walk, I mean, you touched on that. It's a good time to maybe discuss, like, I don't know, a day in the life, if you will, or like what that looks like. So, you have a, you know, you talk about your clients at Stanford, right? So let's just say you have an NIL client. How do you procure deals for them? And like, what does that look like? Are some athletes more involved than others? Do you specifically at New Era take a specific approach to being like, hey, let's find deals that align with your values or your interests? I know you talked about that a little bit. Like, what does it look like for you specifically that might differentiate yourself from what a collective offers or what another NIL agent offers?
I think, I mean, at the end of the day, you kind of form it around the student athlete, depending how much he or her want to kind of dive into that off the court and off the field stuff. As of right now, I think like a lot of stuff on social media and, you know, you get a free product for a free post, you know, as far as an exchange for service and good. And as far as big sponsorship deals, I'm not going to sit here and say I have one yet, just because that you need the clientele to do that. For me to reach out and, you know, I think Brooke on the women's team has about 20,000 followers on Instagram. I've talked to multiple people as far as marketing stuff goes and getting to that, you know, big time off the court stuff. Like it really starts around like 50,000 followers. So, you know, you have to know where you are as far, you know, you can't be shooting for the Apples or the, you know, the Amazons of the world, or, you know, it is what it is. So I think for the average student athlete, your bread and butter are the smaller merchandise stuff where you have your name on there, your number. I've said summer camps, you know, for Brooke, I'm working on, getting lunch sponsors for her, you know, for the kids that sign up. So it's just, you know, it's the little things like that. And they're all very, very innocent at the end of the day. But again, it's a good, you know, experience for, and a good like way for them to get into the community and kind of just shake things up a little bit. But yeah, I think that answered that question.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, I mean, look, the majority of student athletes, and we've been talking about Division I most of the time, but obviously there's other divisions. There's a lot of student athletes. The majority of student athletes, they're not going to be getting paid. They're not getting paid. They're not getting the Gatorades. They're not getting the Nikes. They're not getting the Apples. So for the majority of student athletes, what would you, can you explain, or I guess give like a piece of advice, like maybe dive into like summer camp deal. Like you hear about that a lot. I think it would be great for you to kind of break that down. Like, what does that look like? If you're a student athlete, let's just, I guess, obviously take basketball, for example, at a school and you don't have even 20,000 followers, but you want to give back to your community from, you know, your hometown and you want to run a summer camp. What does that look like? But also more importantly, like how can you make an impact, but also benefit financially? Like how can you actually profit from that?
Yeah. And again, like if a senior coming into a university and they're a freshman, they don't really have that fan base built yet. Do I recommend doing a summer camp? No. It's kind of more for those upperclassmen that have been there for a little bit and they've, you know, they're a face that these, you know, the fan base sees year after year. So you have that, you know, connection with them. But at the end of the day, I think how I ran it for Spencer over at Stanford was, you know, we won, we had some help from, we reached out to those that were in the Stanford camp from years ago. And they were anywhere from seventh grade to ninth grade. Just sent a little email out just saying, hey, Spencer's having a camp of his own here at Menlo Park. Shout out Rec Center for helping out. And we put it on, you know, we put our link on the website at New Era. They signed up and that was kind of our first go around with it. Waivers were required. Spencer designed his own plan as far as the 2-day camps go, giving him some responsibility in the entire thing as well. It wasn't just, you know, me calling the shots and doing things. I was there definitely to help out as far as both days, as far as registration goes, talk to the parents, get pictures. Spencer signed some stuff. But again, it's about It's really about who, like who you are as a player, and you have to be realistic with yourself. And you don't need 20,000 followers to do a youth camp. You know, at the end of the day, I know I grew up playing basketball camps were something that my parents signed me up for and that I love to do. And it's no different from, you know, from how it is now. But now you have just more the student athletes, you know, more involved in, you know, taking control of the camp. This summer with Brooke, you know, we've learned a thing or two, and we're going to go ahead and, you know, get lunch sponsors now. But again, it's, you know, it's all about how they want to go ahead. You're kind of the orchestrator who is just there to kind of oversee things, and whatever ideas they have, you know, is you're there to, you know, make sure that it goes through, it follows through with it.
Yeah. You just talked about the collective a little bit and being the orchestrator, and that made me think of, you know, like running the show, right? So in the past, before NIL, schools ran the show, right? Universities ran the show. But when collectives came into play, collectives kind of ran the show in terms of being able to facilitate money. But now you are also another third party that can run the show. So my question is, and maybe you can talk a little bit about the I immediately think conflict of interest in certain aspects, but obviously there's ways for you to work together. So can you talk about the communication between you, who's representing the athlete for NIL, the school, maybe the athletic administration, or even the direct coaches, and also the collective? Like, is there cases where, and I'm sure there are across the country, where it's like a nightmare and everybody wants to do their own thing, but I feel like you've found a good mix to where you all work together.
Yeah, it's I've definitely have talked to multiple coaching staffs, different collectives. For the most part, everyone does it a different way. I'm just here to facilitate. You know, wherever there needs help, you know, I'm there to help. Stepping on toes is not something, you know, didn't do this to say, hey, look at me, this is how it's being run. Basically, you know, I saw a need where, again, being a 22-year-old college athlete and dealing with good money as far as the collectives go, you might not be ready to talk or say stuff that you really want to say. And that's expected. You're still, you know, quote unquote, you're a young adult, but again, you're talking with people that have been there, done that, and have the money to, you know, basically pay for players to come. And there is name, image, and like as far as these collectives go, yes, is it pay for play? I guess one could look at that, but at the end of the day, like, your name is your name, and they're paying you off what you, you know, who you are. And they, the good ones do have, again, as I mentioned, the good ones do have things that they have to do within the community. And some of those things are a list, and I'm there to kind of help as far as facilitate, you know, hey, we doing this, we doing that, you know, where are we at in this and that. Again, it's kind of the, I don't want to say big brother approach, but it's just kind of like the kind of just overseeing and, you know, making sure things are being done. But at the end of the day, the collectives, I think eventually, I think, you know, the NCAA and the universities as of right now, they aren't required to, I mean, they're legally, the collectives and the universities are separate and by no fault of their own. And, you know, I think both the NCAA and the universities needed a couple of years to see some case studies and how this thing works. So I don't blame them by any means, but at the end of the day, there is, I think eventually it'll get to where one is they're, you know, they're together and they kind of form a front office type feel, but again, that's later down the road we'll get to. But yeah, I'm there as a overseer and as a, you know, a helper to the student athlete where they're, again, they've got their own school workload, practice schedule, travel schedule. There's a lot that goes on as far as a student athlete goes. And, you know, I'm just kind of there to help.
No doubt. One thing that you touched on that I forgot to ask before, and just to clarify maybe for the audience, because I feel like a lot of times student athletes forget that they can't just get paid, even though, okay, in some cases it might seem like that or collective money, student athletes are technically getting paid to be there, but there's always legally, there always needs to be something that's done in exchange for payment. So can you talk about that and just clarify like what the actual rule is for somebody that's listening that might want to make sure they're doing the right thing and not just taking money without doing something in exchange for it?
Yeah. I mean, Student athletes do, you know, they're there in scholarship. They're not, you know, kids, they're not dumb by any means. And they should know that there's, you know, things that they have to do by the law of the, you know, the rule of the law as far as NIL goes. And again, there's collectives that do things differently. Some, and it's really what the label and the monetary value is on, you know, from that collective and what they need to do for it. You know, I won't get into like specifics of anything, but a lot of it has to do, you know, with the outreach and working with community. Like I said, there a lot of these are 501c3s. So, you know, at the end of the day, they're not taking or making any money off of it. They're strictly there to help the student athlete kind of, you know, figure out what it means to be essentially a professional athlete, you know, because this is, you know, if you're looking at it in, you know, layman's terms and you want to put a definition on it, their salaries, you know, and it just, that is what it is.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's switch topics up a little bit here and talk about, I know I mentioned before the portal. So this opens up a can of worms, if you will, because the portal has turned into something completely different. I mean, it's, you know, it's free agency. You'll hear it's the open market for what a player's worth for NIL money. It's just something completely different. So I guess first, can you start with what the portal is, and then talk a little bit about how the ability to profit from NIL has changed the decision-making process for where athletes want to go to school and the entire recruiting process?
Yeah, no doubt. Like you said, the transfer portal isn't anything new. I think with NIL, it's shaped, one, it's kind of like professional sports, but with better free agent and waiver rules. It's shaped, I guess, how schools go about their recruiting. For example, you know, I think any freshman that gets a scholarship, you know, if they're not a top 50 kid or a five-star, like they should be extremely proud. Just because at the end of the day, these low to mid-major schools that, you know, might be in some big markets that would have taken a freshman or waiting for a kid that, you know, is out of Power Five who isn't getting the playing time they want, but they have the money to maybe entice a kid to play with, you know, not only playing time, but, you know, there's now money with it. So, you know, you get the best of both worlds. I always preach with all the, you know, whether it be basketball, football, if you want to play professionally, you need to be on the court, you need to be on the field. So it's all about fit and it's about playing time. If professional scouts, they can't evaluate you if you're sitting on the bench. So, you know, what are your priorities? Then obviously if there's, you know, money involved with that, with the playing time and the fit, then, you know, awesome. But it shouldn't be, you know, a kid's first want in looking for a new school when you hit the transfer portal. So, you know, I think as far as the landscape goes, again, I think we'll get more of a better picture once the ends, because the NCAA has put out some, you know, rules or regulations as far as what they want to happen as far as, you know, being Power Five schools allowed to do. But at the end of the day, I think the low majors and the mid majors are almost kind of like, and I say this, you know, very, very nicely, but they're almost like the JUCOs of the D1s, where they're getting these dudes primed and ready to go for a Power Five to maybe come in and, you know, swoop in on the development that they've worked so hard for. You know, not only do they get a bigger spotlight at the Power Five, but they also, you know, get money at the bigger money at the Power Five. And I guess Power Four now with the Pac-12 being gone next year. But, you know, and again, that's for the player to like really understand, you know, am I giving up something great to what I have? The grass is not always greener on the other side. Like, we, you know, I'm sure we've all heard that term before, but you just really have to have the right information. And that's kind of where I come in, like as far as, you know, an NIL agent goes, because there's a lot of coaches that, you know, and staffs that come in and say one thing and do the next. And, you know, it's they're there to win and get, you know, make the best roster possible. So if they can grab a kid at the mid-major level who's killing and, you know, they can get them on the Power Five level, then so be it. But at the end of the day, is that always what's best?
Yeah, and I think you touched on briefly a topic that should be considered more is first of all, what are your goals? Like, identify if you want to be a pro, because just because you're involved with NIL or just because you're a college athlete, let's not forget the percentage of pro bas players that go from college to pro, whether it's basketball or other sports, right? So the majority of student athletes are not going to be a pro. So if you say, hey, sure, if it happens, great, like, but you know that you want to go to med school, or you know that you want to do this job, or you want to make as much money as you can, hell yeah, like, do that, right? Then maybe money is okay, it shouldn't be the only thing you consider, but maybe that's like the first priority. If you do want to be a pro, then you said it perfectly. Like, I don't care if you're making $150,000 from NIL collectives at a Power Five. How are you going to become a pro if you're playing 6 minutes a game? So then you have to start to adjust that personal algorithm of like balancing money and the need for it and the exposure versus the fit. So I just want to double down on that. So, I mean, do you foresee, like, I guess, do you personally help athletes through that process? I think you've helped a couple people before, correct me if I'm wrong, but do you foresee every athlete that goes in the portal in the future, for however long NIL is the way it is, and however long the portal is the way it is, hiring or essentially, being represented by an NIL agent?
I think there should be some, I guess, just information or just a resource out there for student athletes and parents to go ahead and just tap into. Because it is essentially like the next 2 years, like or 3 years, whenever they hit the portal is huge in their development. Some parents, are reluctant to kind of give that, give that opportunity to a guy, a guy like me who's just who's trying to help. Like, hey, like you're going into a situation with little to, like I said, mentioned earlier, you're working a 9-to-5 job. Like, this is what I do full time. So at the end of the day, like, I look at rosters, I look, coaching hot seats, like, who's winning, who's losing, who needs to win, like who needs to say something to, get a kid to come and, this may save his job or get another year crack at it. What, two guard might be going into a situation where there's already, three guards at their position that, that basically are, they're upperclassmen. They've been there for 2, 3 years. So you're walking to a war zone as far as playing time goes. And as a parent, you're sitting there listening to a coach who is telling you everything you want to hear, and there's money attached to it. It's just like, there needs to be, I guess, some voice of reason in the room. And again, I'm not sitting here saying like every coach has bad intentions, by no means. Like, I've had multiple coaches who I've, coached with, played for, like that have, like, they're in there for the right reasons. But like any other job, like every job, there's people that are good at their job and there's people that are bad at their job.
Course.
This is what it is. That's life. So I think
Of
some
course, yeah, that
direction. Go ahead.
no that that I mean you touch on just such important topics. Like, do you it just makes me think of a like, it goes to the label question, because even from my perspective, people calling me an agent, I'm like, man, it's just a label, like an agent, and they think, okay, you got to get a pro basketball contract. Well, no, it's advisor, it's mentor, it's life coach, it's babysitter, it's older brother, it's whatever. It's
Believe
like, so
me, when
do you
I.
call yourself an NIL agent? Like, do you call
I,
yourself, or are you more of a business development consultant?
I being an agent, it has so many different things. Like, I didn't, being an agent, like, shoot, you should have your psych, like,
Without a
just
doubt.
like you need to have, there's so many hats that you wear, negotiator, foresight seer, fortune teller, I guess you could say, as therapist, there's a lot that goes into it. The word agent, yes, it has a negative connotation to it, for years and years and years. And, I guess trying to rewrite some of those stereotypes, but there is good, in some of us, most of us, I would say. But, it's needed. We have this information and this is what we do. And, again, like, I go back to, the situation and fit. It's a parent wouldn't know if this offensive, like the offense that they run is up tempo, but your son is, you know, a big fella that can't get up and down the floor like that. You know, he's not a stretch five. He's not a stretch four. You know, he's a wing defender, and, you know, they need shooting. It's just, you just, things like that, place and fit, you know, that's kind of mainly what I, you know, what I do within the portal and what I preach. And like I mentioned, money's just extra as far as, you know, an extra enticing. And I want every college kid to earn as much money as possible, as, you know, universities have benefited off of their back since, you know, the beginning of time, you know, but it needs to be for the right reason.
No doubt. Yeah. I mean, place and fit is just, again, there's so many analogies between NIL / marketing agent / portal agent / guider consultant, and actually, you know, a basketball agent. Obviously, you've had experience with the FIBA agency too, because it is place and fit. Yes, I want you to go to Barcelona and make $1 million, but in order for you to get there, you have to go to the right place. You have to take the right stepping stones. You have to understand the process. And that's really what you're doing, you know? And so, like, I just want to double down on the fact that if there are any parents listening, like, that stuff's important. Like, NIL agent and new era athlete, you might look at the website and think marketing dollars, like, that's next. Like, that's just a byproduct of what you do.
No, for real. And I mean, you know, too, like, as far as the steps, yeah, how many kids and players you know that could be a professional, but they've, you know, they're listening to someone that hasn't done it, hasn't been there. And there's so many players, basketball players, that are coming out, you know, as professionals, that, you know, every year that there's just a new crop of players that are coming out, and those that, you know, just don't take the correct steps to get to that point. Their teams don't have to wait and develop you. Like, they don't. It's just year after year, there's just new players, and, you know, with different attitudes and outlooks on what it means to be a pro and the steps. Like, you can't become a pro unless you've already done it, you know, a couple years before that. You know, there's no switch that you just turn on and, like, now I'm a pro. Like, a long lasting pro has been a pro for, you know, 2 years, 3 years before that.
Yeah, I'm going to jump around here a bit, because I keep, you know, our conversation can go for hours because I keep thinking of new topics that, you know, I want you to share. But in terms of, like, we talked about the label of being an agent, right? Obviously, for our experience with basketball, you can be NBPA certified, you can be FIBA certified, you can now be NCAA agent certified. For NIL agents, you don't need a license, right? So talk about that a little bit. And, like, I guess just in terms of if parents are listening more, or even athletes, like, contracts, because I mean, this opens up a whole separate topic, but for contracts, like, do you sign as an NIL agent, in quotes, a contract directly with the student athlete? Do you take certain percentages of deals? Are there certain services in that contract? And feel free to share as much as you want about generally or about New Era, but just talk a little bit about the contract process of being an NIL labeled agent.
Yeah. So my agreement with the student athlete is just strictly with the student athlete. It's for a year. And again, there's no, I think, you know, FIBA wise, what, you can't sign a guy for longer than 2 years. NBA, you have to re-up every single year. So it's basically the same shape that I've taken with New Era, but I've just done it for 1 year. It's always with the student athlete, unless they're under 18. You know, I represent a high school athlete, who I have had his, you know, his parents sign off on along with the player. So percent, and as far as percentages go, any athlete, student athlete paying a 15 to 20% fee as far as negotiating or getting an NIL collective agreement is, they shouldn't be paying that. There's no professional sports world, and I'm talking NIL collective money, the off the court money, whether it be a sponsorship deal. The norm is anywhere from 10 to 20%. I think off the court for me, I have it at 15, like for a summer camp or whatever. But as far as the salary goes, the NIL collective goes, there's no professional agent making more than 10% as far as the commission goes off of the salary that that player brings in. So there shouldn't be a NIL agent. Again, there's no certification for NIL agent making more than 10% off of the collected money. That's just, it just is what it is. Like you're setting a new precedent. That's not a precedent.
It's an interesting topic, and I'm glad you clarified too. So just to clarify again and make sure I understand, but also for the audience. So that NIL collective money, and that could be for student athletes that are on scholarship that are already going there, or the offer from that school's collective when a student athlete's in the portal, because that's kind of like, I think the, I don't want to call it shady, but like that kind of gray area where NIL agents are advising or helping student athletes in the portal, which is needed, I think, in many cases. But then it turns into this complete free agency of, okay, well, this high major school is offering $500,000, which, okay, maybe that's, you know, an outlier number, but that's real. So, some athletes are getting that at the top, or let's just call it 100,000. You know, taking 20% of a $100,000 offer for that school is a lot of money just for guiding. But you also, I'll flip around to the other side. As a student athlete, you have to understand, like, okay, you called it a business, right? It's now a business. You're getting money. So there's also a business that agents have to play. Like, it's not charity work anymore for them either. So you have to balance that with, you know, it's just a really interesting topic. So I'm glad you clarified the collective money versus the off-court money. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with regulations to try to guide that.
I don't blame, as of right now, I think we're 2-3 years in the NIL world. I don't blame the NCAA. I don't blame the universities for not, you know, taking more of a assertive role in this, just because I think they're trying to figure out the right way to do it. You know, they need the case studies to figure out how to go about this. You know, this is now the reality that we're living in. And I think down the road, and when I say down the road, I think in, you know, the next 6 to 8 months, I think there'll be some more guidelines and, you know, what can and can't be done by, you know, NIL agents. But it's a interesting topic, and you know, as far as that goes, and kids have to understand that they're now being exposed to being what a professional athlete is by getting, you know, paid like this. If you are doing it the right way, like I had a Zoom call with all the parents that I have under New Era, and I had, you know, a CPA kind of talk to them about, you know, what needs to be done in this world, in this climate that you're in, because you're not a W-2 employee by university or a W-2 employee by collective, you're 1099. How do you file taxes? I didn't know what filing taxes as a freshman, sophomore, junior, even a senior in college. Like I wasn't aware of that and what to do. So now getting the financial literacy at this age, like I think becoming a pro, when you do get paid, you'll know exactly what to do. You've been doing it for, you know, the last, you know, 3-4 years, depending on when that money comes in. But again, there's like any in the industry, the ones that are new, there's always going to be people to find loopholes to figure out a way to, you know, benefit themselves, benefit the organization they're working in. You know, you just kind of have to stay calm, cool, and collected until it's all figured out, and, you know, keep doing it the right way.
Yeah, I don't, we're not going to go down this financial literacy, deep hole of conversation, because that's going to be a whole nother episode. But I'm glad you said that. If there's one recommendation you can give for student athletes or parents listening, just to, I mean, get themselves in the right position or prepare themselves, like before they start bringing in NIL money, is there a resource that they can go to, or like what would be a step that you would advise them to do just to prepare themselves for either collecting, managing, operating the money that they bring in?
Man, if you're really making that much money, like I would probably look into opening like an LLC for, you know, your student athlete. You know, they are now a business, and, you know, you get some tax breaks with that. You know, it's the smart thing to do, especially when you have the, again, the big time money coming in. And, you know, at the pro level, pros do it. Like, there's pros make their own selves businesses all the time. You know, it's just what the real world is. And I'm by no means sitting here, you know, saying that I know everything on that side, just because that's why I had the Zoom call. Like, I, you know, had professionals speak on it. But at the you know, end of the day, you are opening up a new chapter and a new, you know, a new, just work. It's just the
business, era, quite literally.
Yeah, it's literally an entirely new era. And that's why, you know, I don't fault anybody for doing it the right or wrong way. And, but there's definitely a moral way to do stuff. And you always, you know, should have that central and should know, you know, what's good, what's, you know, probably an eyebrow raiser, and what's just flat out wrong. You know, that should always be clear. But, you know, how other people kind of navigate through this, you know, on the financial side and the many other sides, is, you know, it's up to the holder.
Definitely. And Clay and I are not claiming to be tax experts by any means here, but, you know, just going through it, I highly recommend opening an LLC, even if you're making $10, you know, if you do any deal, just open it. I mean, you're a business, treat it like a business. The more that you do treat it like a business, I think the more success you'll see. Man, all right, let's see. As we wrap up here, because I know I've been picking your brain for nearly an hour, just talking about heading into the future, I know you talked a little bit about some upcoming maybe NCAA proposals or maybe upcoming federal state rules on that topic. Is there anything that you see come? I know you talked about next 6 to 8 months. Like, where do you see the NCAA going with this? Are there specific rules you see them coming out with? Do you think there's going to be a licensed program that NIL agents, in quote, need to go through? What are some of the upcoming changes specifically through either NCAA or federal law that you see coming into play?
I think, well, the NCAA has proposed that the universities, I think, take more control of the collectives, you know, and having staff members, support staff that are there for NIL, you know, purposes. As far as, you know, and this, the federal, state, like, they all go, it's all kind of how they want to act on it. So it is, you know, hopefully there is some uniformity that I think is much needed. As far as, you know, what comes next, I think, again, I think I touched on this a little bit, but I do kind of foresee a, you know, I think the NCAA said a subdivision, I think, is coming. For Power Fives, and they basically, I think it's kind of that front office type feel where it's like, you know, this is the budget that we have for this athletic program. Because, I mean, essentially these collectives and universities, since they are separate entities, they're basically, you know, they're separating their power, and like their power as far as, you know, money goes. Like, they're, you know, if I'm, you know, donating to the collective as far as the financial dollars to the athletic program, I'm not then going to donate to the school, you know, because, like, you're just splitting up the powers that be. So I think it'll benefit universities financially in the long run, you know, if they are more involved with it, and assign people to, you know, specific roles within, you know, the recruiting aspect of it. And again, like, or programs, and this has been going on for years and years and years. But I think now, you give the California kid to make this reference, and we talked about it, but it's a little bit like, you know, marijuana, where it's just like a little frowned upon, but it's legal. And mm-hmm. NIL is like very similar. It's like, it's legal, but let's, you know, kind of keep it on the low, and until it's, you know, very mainstream, then this is kind of how it's going to work.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, man, but the past couple of months they're from the Power Fives. These schools are so big with so much backing, so much exposure, so much power that you just start to think, like, how it's already a pro, it's already the pros, right? It's already big time business. What's stopping private equity money from coming into college athletics? Not much. And that opens a whole can of worms, another conversation about, it's just, what's the point of the NCAA?
Yeah.
The point of the NCAA in 5 years is for mid-majors, that lower subdivision. It is, right? Those schools need the NCAA, but Alabama football does not need the NCAA.
No, no, not
so
at all.
Anyways, we're not going to dive into this one in this episode. That's for another day.
College sports, it's very much a professional run business. I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's you've probably heard pro athletes, they get to their organizations as professionals, and you know, they're like, man, my college's facilities were way doper than this. Like, you know, like what's going on? But it's like at the end of the day, these colleges have never had to pay a salary or pay players. So all that money, tuition and whatever, backing goes straight to facilities and all that good stuff. And, you know, now here we are at a time where it's like, all right, well now college athletes are getting paid, and, you know, just it's all very interesting. It's a new era, as we've said, and I'm very much here to see how it all unfolds and, you know, just, you know, try to do things the right way in the meantime.
No doubt. Well, last question here. Speaking of the future, Division I programs, obviously they're trying to keep up with all the different legislation and the changes that come, but how should they leverage NIL now? Like, is there any recommendations, if any coaches, because, you know, the audience, I have a lot of coaches that listen both pro and then college. If there's a college coach listening, how should they leverage the resources at their hands of NIL to help them win games in the future?
I think leveraging just your alumni base, like at the end of the day, like, yes, money is awesome. But that ball is whatever sport you play is not going to, you know, bounce or, you know, again, it's not going to bounce forever. And introducing these student athletes to a person of, you know, in their shoes off the, you know, in the real world, as they say, as far as job wise goes, if there's a, you know, a CEO, or if there's a, you know, a founder of a company that went to a school, and, you know, if the sports program was smart, like, or just the university was smart, like, I would just introduce and, you know, have those people at hand, just willing to talk to them, and maybe an internship, you know, as far as the summertime goes, to, you know, if you don't have the money necessarily, and again, money isn't everything. And, you know, your NIL deal is only going to be there for, you know, the 4 years that you're in college, you know, 5 years for some guys, and they're in the COVID era. But, you know, utilizing the alumni base, because I think there's a lot of universities out there that have a lot more to offer than, you know, than they're kind of really just thinking about. But that's the route I would go if I didn't have the quote unquote Power Five, you know, backing financials. Utilize the other resources that you have, and those are, you know, the alumni that hopefully are proud to call themselves alumni.
Couldn't agree more. Great advice. Well, this was amazing, man. The last thing before I let you jump here is called the Sports Business Lightning Round. So I got to hit you with a bunch of questions. First thing that comes to your mind, you gotta answer. Sound good?
Uh-oh. Yeah.
All right. What's your favorite color?
Blue.
Do you prefer coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Pizza or pasta?
Pizza.
Would you rather be able to speak to all animals or speak four languages fluently?
All animals, without question.
What is your favorite country outside the one you're in now?
Man, Spain.
That's a good one. What's one of your biggest strengths?
Being able to communicate with all different types of people this world has to offer, whether it be, you know, from Europe, from, you know, low-income families, high-income families, you know, blue, red, black, yellow, you know, I feel like I, you know, can relate to a lot of people.
Awesome. Who is one of the first people to really believe in you?
Man, I'm gonna have to go with my man Mike Reynoso. Give him that first real kind of like college coaching job at the JUCO level. He learned a lot, grinder. Probably, you know, one of the reasons why I'm, you know, definitely sitting here today for sure.
I love it. What's one of your biggest fears?
Man, I guess just failing and just, you know, just failing in life, where, you know, or not doing something that you love to do. But I think I've crossed that bridge a while ago. I'm doing something that I'm loving to do, that's in sports.
If you could have dinner and drinks with anyone in the world, dead or alive, who's one of the first people that come to your mind?
Kobe Bean Bryant.
And last one here, if you could turn back time and talk to 18-year-old Clay, what would you tell him?
Man, I know I said failure, but just don't be afraid to fail and try stuff. It is something that I think everyone, hates to do, but you don't learn from, the failures that you've had. So just, take a risk and go do what you love to do.
Awesome. My man, you crushed it. This was a pleasure to have you. I know all the education that you gave us at NIL here is gonna do wonders for the audience. So I appreciate you coming on, and I'm pumped to get back in the gym with you sometime soon, man.
My man. Hey, I appreciate you, Kev. Listened to a bunch of episodes. Happy to be on. Happy to share the knowledge of this, ever-changing new era or new NIL world that we're living in. And let's keep going, man.
Appreciate it, brother. We'll talk soon.
All righty, sounds good.
Thanks again for listening, my friends. If you enjoyed the episode or if it brought you any value at all, it would mean the world to me if you could give it a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. If you share it on social media, make sure you tag me at Kevin Tarka. If there are any topics that you want me to dive into or any guests you'd love for me to have on the show, just shoot me a message and I will do my best to make it happen. Have an amazing day and hope to see you back here soon.